Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood. With me tonight is my co-host, as always,
Chad Mitz.
Welcome to another weird, wild, wacky week in the world of genre movie news. Chad, it is a Thursday night, roughly around 10 o'clock at night. Where have we just arrived from?
Watching a turd in the wind.
Oh, well, you know, that can mean many things. I mean, we do live in a very complex age now where there are many different synonyms and acronyms for different things. Describe what you mean by a turd in the wind.
I mean, I don't even have anything clever to say about this. I'm just
you mean we are venom.
Yes, This is the illusion of how this is going to go. I had nothing clever to say to even try to describe what we just saw. Nothing.
I did not believe what we just saw. All right. So we have just returned from our screening of Venom. It was originally supposed to be a 6 p.m. screening. I pushed that back to a 7. We saw it in an auditorium. So let's start where we always start, with attendance. Filled out nicely later, so I'd say, what, about 13, 14 people?
Nicely is generous, but yes, that number is accurate. It's nicely because they put us in the closet theater, which should tell you, again, tell you where this was going.
And we have this disagreement, but they put us in the closet theater for Fantastic Four as well.
We were not in the closet.
We were in the closet.
We were not in the closet.
We were in the closet.
I know we weren't in the closet, because I'm pretty sure we went up the elevator.
No, we didn't.
We were sitting all the way at the top.
We were sitting all the way at the top because we came in and walked up the steps, because there were only like 8 steps up to the top because they put us in the closet.
You know what?
Yeah. Keelan should be able to verify this information.
I'm going to ask him, and if he doesn't give me a suitable answer, I'm just going to I'm going to make up the correct answer. Mm-hmm.
So, long-awaited Venom movie is now done. Tom Hardy's performance is out into the world, and we are gifted a very, very, very interesting Woody Harrelson. So your overall thoughts, and then we'll get into our good, our bad, and our not so good.
My overall thoughts is that a lot of people have said this movie feels like it's out of the 90s. I would agree. I felt that it evoked feelings of a movie that I've seen in the 90s, like when I was in high school. I just cannot pinpoint which ones. So with that being said, I don't think it's the worst movie ever. However, being that we're in 2018, that's a far cry from what I would expect from a comic book movie these days. So that's like the general impression.
I felt like I was back in like Daredevil, Elektra, 2004 to 2006 range here. What you've seen in the reviews about uneven performances is true. What you see in the reviews about uneven tones is true. We use the term all the time for Justice League, a very interesting product of two directors. What we got tonight was the very interesting product of 17 writers. That's what it felt like. And there, I think there are 7 credited writers. I think 5, 6, 7 accredited writers on this thing. So, like, it's a hodgepodge anyway. I feel like this is something from, like, early 2000s, and the CGI isn't great, and, you know, it's got an Eminem song, for crying out loud. I mean, like, what doesn't scream mid-2000s, like a movie with an Eminem song?
There was a point where I just gave up on CGI, and I'm like, this is what it is, I accept it.
The final battle is very messy, to say the least, literally.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's get into our good, our bad, and our not so good. The accurate count on the writers?
2, 3. So there's 4.
Four.
For the screenplay.
Okay. And that's not including story by credits.
No, story by, well, there's 1 for story by, and then there's 1 for screen story by.
Yeah. What, what's the difference?
I don't know. They're just two different names.
I'd have to call the Screenwriters Guild.
Yeah, I don't know. There's two separate people with those two different credits.
So total about five.
Six.
Six.
Yeah.
So let's get into our good. What did you like about this movie, Chad?
I liked Tom Hardy. I and that's like the universal thing about this movie is this movie's carried on the back of Tom Hardy, and he was the thing I liked the most. I liked, like, I was watching it and I'm like, I like his Eddie Brock. And there's a point in the movie where it becomes a buddy comedy movie where it's Eddie Brock talking to Venom, and half the time it's just Tom Hardy talking to himself with a voice. And he found a way to make that work. Does it look a little weird and nutty at times? Sure. But, like, I wasn't, like, it never brought me out of him as Eddie Brock. Now, I'll save that part for the not so good. And it will still involve Mr. Hardy. But Tom Hardy is, like, hands down, the best part about this movie. If he is not in this movie goes from just...
Goes from 26 to 16.
He might be a little bit less than that.
So, my good. I knew Tom Hardy would kill this role for the simple purpose that I watched an entire movie where all he did was talk on his cell phone in the car, and he had me riveted at the edge of my seat. I mean, what he's going to end up doing with a, you know, disease, Alzheimer's written Al Capone for Josh Trank's going to be delightful to watch. So I knew he was going to be solid. I had no doubts about that, and every review we read said that he was the best part of the film, and I got that. Kind of like Michelle Williams. Like, she's kind of, I mean, she is very Jennifer Jason Leigh, Jennifer Love Hewitt, like, stock 90s, you know, whatever, especially with that bad wig. But here's an earnest performance from her trying, despite what limited amount she's got to work with. And, you know, while her and Tom Hardy don't have great chemistry, they have some chemistry, just enough to make it plausible. And she doesn't overstate the performance. She doesn't go out there with it, which I enjoyed a lot. Especially when you've got a villain who starts out at, like, two, you know, talking to little kids and inspiring them to be, you know, whatever the great things they want to be, and gets turned up to, like, an Eddie Redmayne 11 in Jupiter Ascending. So, I mean, I really like Michelle Williams' performance in this. I think she's sweet. I think she's kind. I think she's enduring. And I think she tries to do some things with an accent at one point that don't really work. But doesn't really work. But I like her performance in this. I think she's solid. I mean, other people will disagree. They'll say that she's a cardboard cutout, you know, cut and paste prop.
But that's not her performance.
That's just the function of the script and the function of the story that she's in. I also like the fact, and I'm going to be quite honest here, they didn't remove her agency. She's a part of the finale and actually helps bring this thing to its conclusion. And also, she gets to be in the suit.
Yep, we got...
It's one shot. It's one shot. And it's the makeout scene that everybody's been talking about. But she's in the suit. And so that's, you know, a step forward, which is a good thing for a movie that everything else feels like is from the 90s or early 2000s. That's a good step forward.
So, I will agree about Michelle Williams. Actually, I will agree about pretty much everybody. Like, I had no issues with the cast and their performances. I mean, the one that I can pick at the most is probably Riz Ahmed, but by the point that he's, like, starting to turn it up, I'd already resigned myself that this is a 90s movie and it fit for that kind of stupid aesthetic. So, I was fine with him. So watching that, I'm like, I like all these performances. I'm like, well, this goes to what I had been saying. I like all the pieces of this. I just didn't think I would like the movie. get further into that.
I mean, his performance, to his credit, doesn't go up to 11 till he bonds with a symbiote.
Mm-hmm.
Which would be expected. I mean, look, nothing, and I mean absolutely nothing, you will see this year or in any year for the rest of your life will come close to Eddie Redmayne Jupiter Ascending. Dude was like in the same month he was getting awarded an Academy Award, was in this movie going off like a madman. It was nuts. And you will never see anything that nuts ever again. But at least when he goes nuts in this movie, Arad does, it's when he bonds with the symbiote. So let's move to our not so good. What did we, what was our, you probably could have done that a little bit better.
The easy answer is everything. But to be more specific, I wasn't in love with CGI, but I knew that going in, and again, at a point, I was just like, it is what it is. But then just the whole nature of this movie, it starts off, it actually starts off better than I thought, and then it kind of devolves into this.
Takes a bit.
It does take a while to, get going, but once it gets going, it's like, okay, this is why I feel like you're a 90s movie and a bad, not a bad one. If this was a 90s movie, it would have been probably an upper echelon one. We're just in a whole different time. And that's the thing. It's just like they took the 90s aesthetic and thought that was a good idea.
Including the font of the freaking credits.
Yeah. It's like when they were making the movie, they're like, okay, Venom was popular in the early to mid 90s. Let's take everything from that era of movie making and let's make a movie in 2018 and forget about the taste of the audience and how that has evolved from there. And that's my biggest problem, with the movie presented. My bigger overarching problem is the one I've been harping on forever, is the fact that you gave us a Venom movie with no attachment to Spider-Man.
Which causes you to lean on comments.
Yeah, I mean, they established a mythos for this Venom. But as I'm watching it, Tom Hardy give this Eddie Brock performance that I like, and I really can enjoy seeing him as Eddie Brock, I'm like, just imagine this Eddie Brock meeting Peter Parker. But I can only imagine it, because it's never going to happen, because you've made this movie. And so, while I'm getting annoyed that this movie exists with all of these great things that are now never going to be available to this other side of the universe, the more profitable side, some will say the more better made side. So that was my constant annoyance with this movie, is like, if you put these things in the proper place, you can make all the money. And now you're not going to make much of the money.
But Chad, didn't you read that Hollywood Reporter piece 3 weeks ago? Sony is propositioning Marvel, man. They're flaunting out these characters, trying to get the bling bling, trying to get the attention, and see when they do things that are right and good, and Marvel sees that they're right and good, they're going to take those characters, they're going to come to the table, and they're going to negotiate with Sony, and Sony's going to negotiate a deal to put them in the MCU, but also still keep their solo movies. Just like they did with Spider-Man. Don't you know that, Chad?
If you watch any of these drug movies, you will know that what happens is the dealer comes up and they give you the first hit for free to get you hooked. Now, this is the thing. Sony thought they were the dealer. We're going to give you the Spider-Man. Let you do some stuff with it. You're going to feel hooked on having Spider-Man universe, and you will come back to us and ask for the catalog. And we're going to be like, now you got to pony up. But what they didn't know was Marvel's the biggest gangster on the block, and you gave them that hit, and what they did was they gave you a bigger hit back of see, this is what we did with Spider-Man. And guess what? We don't need him anymore. You can try to pull him back. They're going to hate you, not us. So we're giving you the hit. Now, give us the money. Sony thought they were pulling up to the table, giving the first hit, and Marvel turned right around, gave them a bigger first hit, and now Sony's like, I don't know what to do. I can't. So they, what did Sony do? They turned to getting high off their own supply, which is another thing you learn from watching those drug movies. You never get high off your own supply. So what? So Sony gave them that hit, and Marvel gave them that hit, and they're looking like, what are we going to do now? I know. We got this character right here, Venom. Let's go get high on Venom. And now they're getting high on Venom, and they're like, but it ain't as good as what they got over there. And they're going to be stuck, and Marvel's just going to be sitting there at the desk, fingers tapping together, like, so what are we going to do? And Sony's about to get fleeced. That's what's about to happen.
So, my not so good. I have a list.
I imagine.
First off would be your music choices. I don't think you have the best music choices here in this movie. I don't think some of the cues work. I don't think it fits some of the pacing, and especially in some of the quieter moments. Not so good would be the Venom voice that Tom Hardy chose. Although, of all the Tom Hardy voices that we've had in his career, I think this is probably the most understandable.
It is.
So, kudos to him on that. But it's still not so good. The putting of a Spider-Man into the Spider-Verse 5 minutes preview at the end of your movie, after your post-credit stinger, when there's 5 people left in the auditorium to see the preview, that would generate enough interest for you to go buy a ticket to see Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, is also not so great.
My thing with that is, I don't mind it because I got to see it, and I was excited to see it, and I really enjoyed it. However, it is a cartoon. That means it's a cartoon with Spider-Man and the young Spider-Man. So that means the audience is going to be kids. I cannot take a kid to see Venom. That is just not what's going to happen. So you're, once again, Sony, you're messing up. You don't know the demographics of your goddamn movie. Kids are not going to see this preview at all. Like, my daughter is like, she knows all this stuff because of me. She knows Venom. She had been afraid of Venom for a long time because I have a Venom sitting on my dresser. And for a long time, she would always be like, turn it down. Don't let me look at it. Now, because of the commercial stuff, she knows who Venom is. She knows Venom has a movie. But she's not really interested in seeing the movie. And I straight up told her, you ain't seeing it. And I know a lot of parents are going to be the same way. Deadpool is not. But still, I mean, it is. He really is just a monster. He does eat people. Your target audience.
We will hurt only good people, Chad.
He didn't talk like a doofus. He just... he was... I don't know.
We will only hurt good people.
There was a point, I guess, I just got endeared to the Venom voice. I didn't mind it. I actually found it, like, fitting for what they were going for. But anyway, this is not the kind of thing you're going to bring a kid to. But Into the Spider-Verse is definitely not a thing families are going to go to. So you're missing your target audience. So they're going to have to release this clip probably next week. And then what's the point of putting it with this movie?
Well, I mean, it is going to confuse people when Peter Parker's dead.
Except, with the exception of the very first thing that shows up in the frame when they cut to this movie, which is in another universe. And which, if their goal is to be like, we have all these spider properties, they just take place in different universes, that was like their first foray into doing that, then bravo. But again, money, target audience, ain't seeing this movie. Kind of wasted.
Indeed. I think another not so good for me would really have been the humor. We were entering like 13-year-old potty humor for a lot of this, especially in the Venom stuff. I really think they could have done better, but the stuff in the lobster tank is just, you know, I've heard a lot about it over the last few days. It's okay.
Do you know why you've heard a lot about it?
Because he actually did it himself?
Well, it's in one of those interviews, they were like, they were going to do this scene. And the way the interview is set up, it makes it sound like there's a fight scene that happens. But as soon as I saw the lobster tank, because it's the first thing you see in that scene, I'm like, okay, so this is that scene. But they were setting up for the scene, And they're making the set up for the restaurant, and they brought in the lobster tank. And Tom Hardy saw it, and he's like, I don't know what y'all gonna have to do, but I'm getting in this tank. And that's how that happened. That was the only reason he got in the lobster tank, because he saw him setting up for it, and he was like, oh, Eddie's gotta go into the lobster tank. And so they had to figure out a reason for him to get in the tank.
He was hungry.
I mean, and, well, he was hot. It was like, right before he went in, he was like, oh, you're burning up. And he was like, I'm burning up. And he got in the tank, and it was like, it started cooling him off. So they, bravo, they came up with a way to get it all tied together, but that's why that happened. It wasn't originally supposed to happen. Tom Hardy was just like, gotta do it.
Well, that was another part of the not-so-good for me, was like the sketchiness of the explaining of the symbiotes and the bonding of the symbiotes to their host. Like, there isn't really a clear delineation as to why Drake and Brock can survive while hosting these individuals, but, you know, someone like the little, you know, scientist girl with glasses can't, you know. And even in Eddie, there's that time where he's saying, look, your heart is being, you know, literally, you know, eroded away. And Venom's like, I can heal that. But still, it's like...
So this is one of the things I hate in movies. You establish rules,
and then you break them.
Immediately break them. Because they establish, okay, the symbiotes can't bond with anybody. Can't bind with any, they're bound with living things, but they can't bind with just anything. But then right after that, we're seeing what we find out later is Riot, and he's just hopping bodies. And the bodies are fine until he decides to ditch them. And we don't know what happens when he ditches them, because all we saw was the first Asian lady that he found, the EMS worker, when he hopped off her to the older lady, she just passed out. We don't know if anything happened to her body. But then when we're getting the Life Foundation, immediately, if they're not responsive, they just like shrivel up and crumple them up, and the host is dead. So that you've established a rule, and then you just immediately broke it. And then the whole thing with Eddie dying, they're saying his heart is atrophying, and it's because of the symbiote. And then the symbiote says, "I can fix that." And you know what? I believe him, because during that chase that got him there, Eddie's legs were broken. And what happened? The symbiote fixed them. So...
just like they fixed the Asian EMS worker.
Exactly. So, you're establishing that the symbiote has this healing power, yet it's killing Eddie. So, which one is it? And apparently, it's not killing Eddie, because we know at the end, they're living a happy life. They decided to be together, and Eddie's walking around fine, so...
which, again, doesn't make a lot of sense given the ending, but that's okay. So, what was your bad?
I kind of got into it with my frustration of seeing the good things that I like wasted in this movie. And it really is just the sum total muckness of this movie. Like that end fight kind of sums up the whole thing of this movie. You bring things that are supposed to look good visually, you put them together, and it's just a bunch of visual noise and
blending mess. Silver and black doesn't work.
No, that's what I know why they didn't do it. Well,
the blue, you could have gone with the yellow, or you could have gone with the blue. We see both.
Well, Riot might be actually silver in the comic, but there's one that is, I think there's one that's purple. There is one that's typically bonded with the female she is. Red and yellow, mostly yellow, which is a stark contrast. And of course, there's the obvious red, but you're not doing red because you want to do that for
next time.
Which is another thing that, so as much as this movie frustrates me, and I don't think it's very good, the fact that you gave us Cletus at the end with Woody's bad red wig, and you're teasing Carnage. I don't want this series to continue. I want it to die a death, but there's a part of me that's sad that I will not see Woody Harrelson as Carnage. So it's a bunch of stuff like that. It's like, again, you give good stuff, and then because you're terrible at everything else, the good stuff's just going to sit there and wither on the vine.
So comments? Comments? Really? So comments move at a very fast speed across the universe. And literally, your plan is to, within 2 weeks, get your shuttle and go back to a comet, which one would assume has already past your planet.
So,
a comet that, mind you, you don't see in the opening shots of the film. You just see the shuttle coming into frame.
Again, this is where you establish rules and stuff. The beginning, the way they describe it, it makes it seem like they weren't going up there to meet this comet because they knew there was life on it. They were just going up there because he had built a ship and he had the capability to get there, and they found the comet, they got on it, and they discovered all the symbionts. So they took some and brought them back, and that's the whole gist of it. Now, you've said everything about the comet and moving fast and all that stuff. That makes no sense. Now, when we get to the end, Riot, the actual symbiote Riot, is like, well, we're going to come back here and we're going to make an invasion. We're going to take this ship. We're going to go to that comet. We're going to get everybody, load them all in. We're going to come back to Earth. We're just going to pig out.
I don't think that they were going back to the comet. I think they were going back to the planet.
Because
he says, I'm from a planet where there are millions of us.
So that would be another part of their inconsistencies, because they clearly say comet, and there's millions of them, or thousands of all of them, one really big number on this comet. And if he says planet later on, it's one of those things you're supposed to catch and be able to fix. But there's a whole bunch of stuff like that in this movie. But either way, if that's Riot's big plan, and Riot is the leader of the symbiotes, well, you already had a ship. You had the capability to overpower humans. You had the capability to load up the ship and come back. So why would you let them take a few of you, come back, and then make another trip up when you could have just...
Especially ones that you let die, because you lose a couple of symbiotes along the way.
Yeah, they're four total. Yeah, and we lose two. So that's just bad writing. You could have come up with a better way to explain all this stuff and get us to that point without making it seem like, oh, well, Riot's a freaking idiot.
Yeah, I mean, my bad would be that entire third act. That entire third act, aside from Michelle Williams, I mean, they lay out very specifically high-pitched noises and fire. And so they give you the antidotes for how they end the film. Mm. They telegraph it very, very, very broadly and, you know, in your face. I mean, typical 90s.
Yeah.
But you can't tell who's who. You can't tell which symbiote, because they're mixing together, especially when the noise goes off. They start exploding off of each other. They don't really define power set, so, like, Venom basically just says, trust me, he's got shit you haven't seen before, and then they proceed to show him morphing it all kinds of weapons. But they don't really explain how he's doing that or why he's doing that. They establish the fact that Venom... They don't do service to Venom and Riot's relationship, because Venom is basically just saying, look, I was a loser dude like you on my planet. Well, if that's the case, then why does Riot look at him in the face and go, get on my ship, bro? Like, why would he want to take him back to where they're going if he was that much of a loser? Like, the other part of it, too, for me, is that there's no demonstrated act that Eddie Brock does as a human being to display love and compassion for others that would cause Venom to see the love and compassion of humanity in him, which would cause him to second-guess the idea of allowing the world to be destroyed. Because he says it when he's sitting on top of the building, he's looking out, this is a very, very pretty place, I'll be very sorry to see it all go to hell. Like, he, you know, his plan is not that any different from Riot's. It's, you know,
it's pretty much to let Riot's plan go.
Yeah, yeah, we're going to come down here, we're all going to eat, because we like human flesh, and... you guys are weak and can't host us for very long, and, you know, you make the argument that, well, Riot, Venom and Brock bond, but he likes Brock's body, so he doesn't jump really quickly, unlike Riot, who changes, like, four bodies over the course of the film.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you don't really explain why, I mean, if the health stuff, if he's affecting Eddie this way. You also don't really explain how Michelle Williams gets the dual personality thing before she sees Venom trying to bite a guy's head off in the lab. So those would be my not so good. I mean, you know, Ahmed is the villain over the top. The blending of the you know, the suits and the back and forth. I would say that one of my good things is the publisher of the newspaper. I thought that was an effective, like, dick, basically. If that worked for me.
Mm-hmm.
Not in a J. Jonah Jameson way, but, like, just like a I get it kind of way, especially in this media climate. And I thought that was a very effective commentary on our current moment with, you know, media, you know, the media situation there. But, I mean, there was a lot I didn't like in that third act. And for as much charm and goodwill as you could build up with Williams and the symbiote and Brock and the boyfriend who, you know, we're not going to tell him about us, you kind of lose in that third act.
Mm-hmm.
And then you, you know, you tease in the post-credit stinger, what's next? So.
Yep. Good old Sony giving us a tease for what's next, and not even sure if it's going to happen.
Not like they've never done that before.
No. This is the first time.
Anything else that you didn't like that particularly egged you on or frustrated you?
No. Nothing that I can really think of. I mean, the more I sit here and think about it, maybe the more I can pick out. But, yeah, it's
a blah movie. It is a movie that is more Armageddon than it is Deep Impact.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I went in there expecting to really, really not like it. And I walked out not hating it. But it's not a good movie. And it should die a death.
This is a movie that will sit on your television while you're cooking dinner.
No, probably.
No. Maybe 2 a.m. on HBO sometime.
Yeah. If I'm just up and nobody else is up and it's on, I'm like, oh. And it depends on what part it's on. I'm like, ah, I might watch this for a while.
That motorcycle car chase went on for way too long.
It did. I mean, they did some cool stuff in it, but I mean, it was a while.
For a film that has like a under 2 hour runtime, you know, for that to take up that much time and that many beats, it's just felt excessive.
Actual movie time. That movie's got to be like 140, like tops.
Mm-hmm.
It was quick. Even though there are parts that feel like it's forever.
Again, another 90s trait.
Yeah. Yeah, good old hour and a half action movie. It'll get you every time.
So, Chad, where do we go from here? Or where does Sony go from here? They're on track to make anywhere between $54 and $60 million this weekend. Miss Pascal, she's got a lot riding on this. Mr. Rothman has a fair amount riding on this. Avi, you know, has got some cash riding on this. There's plans for a Morbius movie. There's plans for a Black Cat movie. There's plans for a Silver Sable movie. There's plans for a Kraven Manhunter movie. You know, at one point, I guess, there is still talk of a Sinister Six of some kind. So what is the future for the Sony, quote-unquote, standalone Spider-Man villain universe?
So, before I answer that, I want to look up and see how much this movie cost to make. So it's got $100 million. It's $100 million budget.
Projected budget, and you add P&A, probably $120, $150.
I'll say $150. I think it's on the higher end because I've seen Venom stuff everywhere. As we're sitting there at the bar in the theater, there's a Venom drink. There's a Venom commercial on while we're talking about it. So I'll go with $150. So that means it's got to make close to $3 to make its money back. So I think if it gets anything, if it gets $250 and above, I think Sony might actually tempt fate and be like, well, it's not a dud, didn't do what we wanted, but let's push on with one of these other properties that we have. Anything under $2, I think they're going to be like, well, this didn't work out at all. We need to reevaluate. I don't know what their mindset is in reevaluating. If it were me, and I was in charge of Sony, especially since Sony is in such disarray as a company, I would be, okay, open up the phones to Marvel. They're going to open the vein on us, but we're going to work out a deal where they produce all of our Spider-Man related material. We're going to have to mandate that, you know, we get a Spider-Man movie ever so often in their rotation. But they handle all the production stuff. We'll handle all of the
financing.
The financing for it. We get most of the profit, and we'll work out a financing deal between them. That's what I would do. What they will do, who knows? But yeah, I don't see this franchise, this extended Spider-Verse, existing beyond this movie. I think it will go the way of the Dark Universe, where we had all this potential promise for a whole full fleshed out universe, and it dies on the first movie.
So I don't think Mr. Arad is as bad as Mr. Kurtzman. Look, I think this ends up being a situation, honestly, where, you know, Greg Williams cut off the head and the body will die. I think you're going to get organ donation out of this. I think people are going to want more Eddie Brock / Venom played by Tom Hardy. And I think they will do enough numbers to justify doing that. Now, whether you bring Foster back, whether you bring any of these four writers back, that's an open question. But you have the plot laid out already, and if you make your money back, you can do it. I would not rush out a Black Cat Silver Sable movie or a Silver Sable movie, and I definitely wouldn't touch Morbius right now.
Okay.
But I would green light a Venom 2. I would not do the, you know, DC thing and be like, we're going to produce a solo Superman movie and you'll never get another one of those for another 10 years. Like, we've discussed on this podcast many times. Man of Steel 2, solo Batman movie, Batman v Superman, Justice League. Maybe Wonder Woman in between, mm-hmm. Dawn of Justice and Justice League. They didn't go that route. They went full on, you know, Batman v Superman immediately after Man of Steel. And it hurt the character development. I think if you do Carnage versus Venom, that could sell, provided you get a better wig and better graphics and a little bit bigger budget and a little better writers and a little better direction. And I think that they will greenlight that. And if they don't, they might end up doing a Black Cat or Silver Sable because you want to hit on the diversity of the times right now and put his Venom at the end of it in a stinger, which would tie the movies together and create this shared cinematic universe.
I think it would be more along the lines of the second thing you said, because if they want to continue with Venom, I do think they have to up the budget. And if it doesn't justify upping the budget, then feasibly they just can't do it. It's got to be more along the lines of 150.
Well, the great thing about what they did in the post-credits stinger is that Cassidy says, when I get out of here. And rest assured, I will get out of here. But when I do, there will be carnage. That suggests that, you know, he doesn't have to get out of jail immediately.
Yeah.
So you could do a Black Cat or a Silver Sable movie set 6 months after the events of Venom that still takes place in the same universe and have him cameo.
Yeah. Yeah, you could.
And
I don't want that to happen, but you could.
But, I mean, that if you don't do gangbusters, if you don't do $500 million, and you don't dud out and make $15 million opening weekend and you're dead on arrival, if you're middling somewhere in there, that's your best option.
Yeah, that probably is best for them. Still don't think it's going well.
So, we will see. So, Chad, anything else you want to cover? I mean, obviously, it's been a crazy and chaotic week with, you know, Star Wars, The Mandalorian being announced, you know, Mr. Favreau giving the go-ahead for that. A live-action Lilo and Stitch movie being added to the long list of animated to live-action properties that Disney's going to do. You know, obviously we had the return of Murphy Brown after 25-plus years in, on the TV side. We got Rupert Murdoch coming out and saying Fox, just Fox, will be the name of the new Fox company that is left, that is all the TV stuff, Fox Sports, the Fox Broadcasting, Fox Business, Fox News, and and Fox Sports 1. The other entity will be headed up by his son, and it'll be just called Fox. We got the announcement of that the Star Wars show will be on the streaming service, which will be another reason to try and convince people to buy. DC is still, doing the DC thing. They put out an Aquaman poster. They're going to get a new trailer out there fairly soon. I still stay concerned about Mortal Instruments because this damn movie's supposed to come out in December, and I haven't seen new marketing materials since July.
They got to move it.
They kept moving. They've just been moving Battle Angel. They moved it like three times.
Is that Fox too?
I think Sony. Sony is buying Attila. Or Alita.
Alita's Fox. I'm pretty sure Alita's Fox.
So. But yeah. I mean, it's been an interesting week, as it always is.
Yep, and we'll get more news probably in the next couple of days because New York Comic Con is going on right now, which is where they're going to, probably where they're going to debut the Aquaman trailer. So, it'll be more eventful this time, in a couple of days.
Would you like to talk briefly about Mr. Kinberg's crazy press tour that he's been on for a movie that doesn't come out until June now?
No, I don't. I don't want to talk about a crazy person that has delusions that things are going to happen that clearly are not going to happen. No.
There's a Gambit movie coming, Chad.
There's not a goddamn Gambit movie. There's never going to be a Gambit movie. It's not happening. They can keep paying people to build sets in New Orleans, and that is good for our economy. They can build the sets in New Orleans and keep tearing them down, because that's as far as it's going to get. If they're building sets right now, they're going to tear them down. Why? This movie doesn't even have a freaking director, and it's supposed to start shooting at the beginning of the year? No. This movie's not happening.
What about that New Mutants movie, Chad, that still hasn't done its reshoots?
Look, man, I don't know what the hell's going on with that. I got no clue. That movie is going to come out in some way, shape, or form. Is it going to be the original version that Josh Boone shot, or the original version that they envisioned that they've reshot? I have no idea at this point. I don't care. I just know it's going to come out. It's probably not coming out when they say it's coming out next year. I doubt that happens. And if it gets kicked down the can from then, it's a question of where it's going to come out. Because, yes, Disney will put it out because the acquisition will probably be done by then. But are they going to waste their time putting it out in theaters? Who knows?
And then, you have the Dark Phoenix movie, which put out a trailer and then 2 days later has a date change.
This thing right here, I read his interview about this, and he almost literally said, the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing. Because he said they were discussing moving these dates because they knew that something else
was moving. Gambit was not going to be able to make it.
So they can take that slot and they can target China and they have more time for reshoots and stuff. And they were in those talks, and then the trailer people came and put together a trailer that included the date, and they dropped it. And then 2 days later, to come back and be like, oops, my bad.
Not only the trailer, but the poster dropped with the February 14th. On a planned rollout on cinema nerd, media.
Yeah. So, and I shouldn't be too hard on them because they are going, Fox is going through this transition. They don't know what's coming and going because of the acquisition. So everything's kind of up in the air. So it's probably easy to get discombobulated. But still, this particular franchise, they didn't need any of those problems. So I'm going to blame it on the producer, who happens to be the writer, who happens to be the director, who happens to be this crazy person that you got me talking about anyway.
Gambit movie, Chad. Going to be more of a romance and a romantic comedy.
It's not happening. I have a better chance of being Gambit than that movie has of being made. And I have no chance of being Gambit.
Channing Tatum does, though. And Laura Shield of Honor wants a Gambit movie made.
She wants something from him. Not necessarily a Gambit movie. And he is no longer married. So she wants it. Have at it. But that Gambit movie ain't happening.
I just don't know why you do frequent rounds, continue on with the press tour when your movie is delayed by 4 months.
Because they don't know what they're doing.
Why is he answering questions? Like, I don't understand. Like, why is he...
Because he's volunteering for this. There's nothing that's coming up that has his name on it that he needs to be talking to the media.
Is he a producer on Bohemian Rhapsody? I mean, I know him and Singer are close, and I know that the Mercury family had a heavy, heavy hand in that production. I know that Singer left, and the whole, you know, dying relative or whatever bogus story.
I don't think he is.
So I mean, if it's not Bohemian Rhapsody, and then he's just doing press because they sent him out to talk about.
They sent him out to put fires out. And he just made matters worse. Mm-hmm.
Why would he continue? What, you ask one site, ask you for an update on Gambit. You give a boilerplate answer. You don't give the, it'll be more like a love story, less of a heist movie now.
Yeah, you don't give more details than are needed. It's just going to come back to bite you in the butt. Bam, that's what we're at.
Especially when you're through director number 4.
Yeah.
So. That'll about do it for this week's episode of the Movies on the Brain podcast. If you want to keep up and follow us on Twitter, I am at BCW Tiger Fan.
At The Mets Theory.
You can also follow our good friend and fellow co-host from time to time, T-Bob Hebert, at T-Bob53. And good news, ladies and gentlemen, we will have Jim Bavida back on our program to talk about the fall festival season films, as he was able to attend the Toronto International Film Festival this year, as well as our upcoming holiday movie season, which, as always, is jam-packed. So we look very much forward to that interview later on in the fall. So, until then, that's Chad. I'm Brian. Have a good evening.